There's never been a presidential commission that had only 6 months, and there's never been one that was asked to address a catastrophe that was actually occurring as we meet.
The Deep Water Spill Commission takes testimony from Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 9th of September. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Alaskans make the case against so-called frankenfish.
It's like making widgets, and they're going to call it salmon, and then not tell a consumer when they go buy it what they're buying.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Governor Sean Parnell today filed another suit against the federal government, this time to overturn the federal action that's holding up oil exploration on Alaska's outer continental shelf. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
In announcing the suit, Governor Parnell said not drilling in the Arctic Ocean puts at risk Alaska's economic security. He refers to estimates of 27 billion barrels of oil, 132 trillion feet of natural gas. He says it'll provide an estimated 41,000 direct and indirect jobs with a $52 billion payroll on an annual basis.
We're talking about something that holds huge economic potential for not only this great state, but this land and nation of ours.
He says the suit challenges the authority of the federal moratorium on deep water drilling that went into place after the BP explosion and spill in the Gulf of Mexico. At a hearing in Anchorage 2 weeks ago, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Director Michael Bromwich said the moratorium did not apply to Alaska's OCS. But last week, Interior Secretary Ken Salazar was less clear on the issue. Salazar said that although the moratorium did not technically cover Alaska, his department is not allowing any drilling to go ahead in Arctic waters. Attorney General Daniel Sullivan says the Interior Secretary is essentially expanding the moratorium in violation of the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act, and that's what the lawsuit addresses. Sullivan says the law requires the department to notify the governor of any expected action and gives the state the opportunity to participate in the decision-making process.
The Department of Interior clearly did not do that with regard to the Arctic moratorium, never consulted the state, or gave notice to the state or Governor Parnell, as it was required to do, never solicited comments, and therefore, we believe, has clearly violated federal law and breached its duty to the state and the citizens of Alaska.
Sullivan says the federal government also violated the Federal Administrative Procedures Act, which requires an opinion, a reason for findings, and a written decision, all of which were absent before Salazar made his comments. He also points out that the state and Interior Department were allied in court, together successfully defending Arctic drilling, until the Deepwater Horizon spill. The Interior Department is unclear on the future of the Alaska drilling ban. Spokeswoman Kendra Barkoff says Salazar has delayed drilling in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas and has canceled 4 lease sales in the Arctic.
We are taking a cautious approach to offshore oil and gas development as we strengthen safety and oversight of offshore oil and gas operations. This includes the Arctic, which presents a unique environmental challenge. We need additional information about spill risks and spill response capabilities.
Sullivan says the federal government has 60 days to respond to the state's legal complaint. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The co-chairman of a presidential commission looking at the Deepwater Horizon oil spill says he's been hearing plenty about the Obama administration's offshore oil and gas moratorium from the people it has affected. Bill Riley has been spending some time in Alaska, hosted by University of Alaska Anchorage Chancellor Fran Ulmer, who is a member of that panel. The eight-member commission is looking into the causes of the Gulf spill and how to prevent it from happening again. In an interview interview with APRN's Steve Heimel today, Riley said even though the moratorium isn't their focus, the issue has so dominated the comments the commission is getting, they decided they needed to respond.
And so we said, look, we don't want to be distracted from the longer-term job the president's assigned us, but we will refer this, the questions we have as to why you can't go rig by rig to look at the moratorium at the adequacy of safety now and approve a resumption of drilling, at least in those where you've vetted them. But that's not our primary concern, and the commission will probably not report on that in a time frame that will influence the decision that Secretary Salazar has to make about when to lift the moratorium. As to whether that moratorium applies to Alaska, I really can't tell from what the Secretary has said so far. It looks like he believes there's a need for more information. He said that, more scientific information and other information. But beyond that, I haven't gleaned from his public comments where he thinks that will go or whether that, I don't see it as directly related to the moratorium in the Gulf.
Well, you had the opportunity to listen to a number of interested members of the public, and of course the memory of the Exxon Valdez spill is very alive for you and indeed for many of the people who spoke last night. I'm just wondering of your what your general overall impression was of what you heard.
We had 21 witnesses last night and a group of about 70 people who appeared to our listening session, which is what it was. And I did a little count of who was for and who was against drilling in the Arctic, and it came out to 6-5, 6-4, 5 against. And the others I couldn't quite tell or didn't take a position. I think there's a perception in the lower 48, largely because of the unified congressional delegation's positions over the years, that the state is more unified on this issue than appears from the kinds of conversations I've had and the people that I've met with. That itself is a very useful experience for me. Getting more familiarity with the specifics of the Chukchi Sea challenges and the plans that have been made to try to address the challenges there probably not something I could have done as well from Washington as I've been able to do it here. And I found the comments and presentations made to us yesterday extremely helpful, as well as the meetings that I've had.
Former Lieutenant Governor and Chancellor Fran Ulmer is a member of your task force, and she was very pleased that you were able to make the time to come up here. I'm wondering about her role in this.
Fran Ulmer is very influential in the commission. I think that Alaska probably suffers some of the consequences of distance and remoteness, and it's very important to us to have somebody who reminds us that the circumstances here are special. The biology of the resources in the oceans is fabulous. It's very different. It's probably richer than the Gulf, much of it. And she also has views with respect to the Offshore Oil and Gas Leasing Act and some changes that need to be made to improve the consultation process with the environmental agencies, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and others. So she's made an absolutely invaluable contribution to the commission.
So the work is at what stage right now? You're still listening, obviously. What happens after that? You've got to get a report together by January.
Our commission has a special responsibility or challenge in that there's never been a presidential commission that had only 6 months, and there's never been one that was asked to address a catastrophe that was actually occurring as we meet. And that has been true for much of the life of this commission, which is now about 2.5 months old. We expect to have first drafts of some of the chapter material within the next month. Our next hearing is in late September. It's going to focus on restoration of the Gulf, a major area of concern, on which I have to say I learned a great deal here about the restoration efforts, which I think are largely very impressive in Prince William Sound. The trusteeship council, the kinds of acquisitions they made of land, the investments they made that in science and monitoring and data. I had a large role in getting the $1 billion settlement that we got, and I'm reassured to see that it looks like it was very well used.
Bill Riley is co-chairman of a presidential commission on the Deepwater Horizon accident. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new tool to monitor Alaska's numerous volcanoes.
It gives us much more clues as to how bubbly magma actually releases its energy in the form of an eruption.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
A wood pellet plant that's had a long path to development is nearly operational in the interior. Oklahoma-based Superior Pellet Fuels held an open house at its new 12,000-square-foot facility off the Richardson Highway in North Pole last night. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Wood pellets look like rabbit food, but they're made from ground, dried, and compressed wood that burns at high efficiency in specialized pellet stoves and boilers. The Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation helped shepherd the pellet plant project, and Fedco CEO Jim Dodson told a large crowd on hand for the plant's opening that it's the culmination of efforts aimed at addressing local energy and air quality concerns.
This shows you what a community that has a need and industry, when they work together, can do to help solve a problem. So this certainly is an exciting project for Fairbanks.
The pellet operation, the first in Alaska, is taking advantage of the state's long heating season, high fuel prices, and abundant wood. General Manager Chad Schumacher says the plant uses a system of grinders, dryers, and presses to make a clean-burning fuel stock.
We get that raw material down to less than 12% moisture before it even goes into a pellet mill, and comes out in less, around 6.5 to 7.5% moisture. That's really the benefit with when you're looking at wood pellets versus other solid fuels for heating your home.
Schumacher says the plant can make enough pellets to heat 6,000 homes. It's unclear how much retailers will mark them up, but he says pellets should be competitive with oil down to about $2.25 a gallon. Schumacher says the plan is to start up at about two-thirds capacity and meet local demand, but there's potential to grow.
There are people that have contacted us from Seward, Seldovia, Kodiak, Galena, a number of different places that this material would be a fantastic heat source.
The consumption of pellets depends on consumers' switch over to pellet-burning stoves and boilers. The appliances are available from several Alaska retailers but have been slow to sell due to unreliable availability of pellets. Robert Carlson of Wholesale Distributors of Alaska displayed a pellet stove at the open house.
The pellet stoves are extremely efficient. As you notice, there is no smoke coming out. And of course, that's what we're promoting, is the clean air. No smoke, and you can actually hold your hand right over the top.
That's because there's so little heat loss up the stack. Carlson says the pellet stoves range in price from about $1,200 to more than $3,500, but can save consumers about 30 to 50% on fuel compared to a conventional wood stove. Inefficient wood stoves are credited with elevating fine particulate pollution that's landed Fairbanks in violation of federal air quality standards. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says a switch to pellet stoves can be part of the solution.
The pellet stove that we see that this material feeds is exempt from all of the rules about what you can do because they burn so clean.
Hopkins says residents can take advantage of borough wood stove trade-out subsidies and tax breaks to get a pellet stove. The pellet plant is also an economic development driver. The rare Alaska manufacturer currently employs 13 people, but could ramp up to 20 at full capacity. The plant will rely on sawmill waste and wildfire clearing for wood first, but will also be contracting with loggers. State Inventory Forester Doug Hansen says the year-round operation will substantially increase local cutting.
We're selling about 500 acres a year of timber, and they're looking at needing somewhere between 500 and 1,000 acres.
Hansen says the pellet plant will create consistent demand for a mix of trees, including low-quality species there's currently minimal interest in. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Federal Food and Drug Administration will take public testimony later this month on an issue that has many Alaska commercial fishermen up in arms. The FDA is considering approval of a genetically engineered Atlantic salmon for human consumption, and the move is considered a threat to Alaska's wild salmon market. But backers of the fish engineering plan say that larger, cheaper salmon on demand will help feed a hungry world. FDA proceedings are set to start September 19th, and Alaskans against the hybrid salmon plan are gathering forces to call a halt to it.
You know, they're seeing numbers of escapements from farm fish being caught by sport and commercial fishermen alike. And that what that means for populations here is it's threatening the wild populations. And these farm fish carry diseases and mutant strains.
That's Molly Andrews with the Sitka Conservation Society. But opposition is coming from Congress, too. The genetically engineered Atlantic salmon, dubbed Frankenfish by opponents to the plan, have been modified with a Chinook salmon growth gene and an antifreeze gene swiped from an ocean eel. Senator Mark Begich is an outspoken critic of the plan. Begich points to the threat to humans who may eat the fish.
I don't have a lot of faith in FDA. When you look at the latest situation that occurred with regards to the egg recall, now, you know, there was a few eggs recalled, several million because of the lack of oversight and what they should have been doing, not only them, but the regulatory agencies related to the FDA. And so I don't have a lot of faith in their ability to manage an industry that they have no clue what it means.
Begich says he believes FDA has not done the work to ensure that this engineered product will not do damage once introduced into the food chain.
I do think the FDA is having this hearing kind of pro forma. They just are going to do it. They slapped a 180-page report down and then said, oh, we're going to have hearings on it, and then we'll move forward. I think they've made a decision, and I think it's an ill-advised decision, and I think this new product, this engineered, genetically engineered salmon, or frankenfish, as I like to call it, will be damaging to the industry, but also it's an inferior product. I think the consumer needs to understand that.
Begich may call them frankenfish, but Aqua Bounty Technologies, the company set to produce engineered salmon, calls the fish Aqua Advantage salmon. Aqua Bounty is a company with offices in Canada and the United States, headquartered in Boston. Many of its corporate contacts are listed in the United Kingdom, however. According to the company's website, it markets and develops biotechnology products to enhance profitability of shrimp and fish farming, a worldwide source of food production in the face of the rapid depletion of the world's oceans. Calls to Aqua Bounty were not returned today. Siobhan Delancey, an FDA spokesperson, says the agency will let documentation and testimony do the talking in favor of the engineered fish. Delancey would not go on audio for this story. Instead, she pointed to the FDA's website as the best information source. That website says, quote, genetically engineering is a targeted and powerful method of introducing desirable traits into animals using recombinant DNA technology. DNA is the chemical inside the nucleus of a cell that carries the genetic instructions for making living organisms. Last year, the FDA issued final guidance for industry on the regulation of genetically engineered animals. This year, on September 19th and 20th, the FDA will hold meetings of the agency's Veterinary Medicine Advisory Committee to address science-based issues associated with Aqua Bounty's application. Those meetings are open to the public, and on September 21st, the public is asked to weigh in on the question of proper labeling for any foods that may be made from the Aqua Advantage fish. Senator Begich.
You know, we can't even get Alaska fresh fish labeled organic, which is unbelievable. The FDA won't allow us to do that, which is outrageous. And yet, here's a product that we know what it is. It's genetically engineered. It's like making widgets, and they're going to call it salmon, and then not tell a consumer when they go buy it what they're buying.
Begich promises to introduce legislation regarding labeling of engineered fish. At issue is the threat of wandering Atlantic salmon, already in evidence in Alaska waters. Aqua Advantage salmon are sterile, eliminating the threat of interbreeding, according to Aqua Bounty. But they grow larger, gaining weight faster than wild fish. Fish farming is illegal in Alaska, but British Columbia fish farms to the south may begin raising the hybrid Atlantics if the FDA approves them for sale in the United States. Other threats are economical, and commercial fishers fear a flood of cheap year-round salmon on an international market could cost Alaskan livelihoods.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Housing Administration's network of FHA-approved housing counseling agencies offers free expert advice to homeowners whose mortgages are at risk, underwater, or in need of refinancing. Visit hud.gov/Alaska for a counselor near you. This message sponsored by HUD.
The Dillingham area has been selected as a site for a new piece of equipment that is expected to help monitor volcanoes around the North Pacific. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
For the last week, a handful of researchers, technicians, scientists, and graduate students have been in Dillingham installing an acoustic array that was initially tested last year. The piece of equipment has been installed on a piece of tree-covered land along the Alegnagek Lake Road that is owned by Chogyung Limited, which is the local native corporation for the Dillingham area. The man in charge of the project is Kurt Saberla. He's an assistant professor of physics for the University of Alaska's Geophysical Institute. He says the acoustic array is a semi-permanent installation that will basically monitor sound waves that can't be heard by the human ear.
Like the microphone I'm speaking into right now, it's a similar diaphragm microphone, but it's tuned for very, very low frequencies. So we have an array designed for a different monitoring project in Fairbanks, but it listens all the time and picks up volcanic eruptions and elutions. It's a long ways from the elutions. So for instance, when Fort Peaked went off, we would have really liked a different array because we couldn't exactly tell which of two volcanoes roughly in the line of sight of Fort Peaked in Fairbanks, which one had actually gone off. This array down here gives us two azimuths that we could use to determine exactly which volcano had started erupting.
Four Peaked Volcano is on the east side of the Alaska Peninsula, and it's surrounded by the Four Peaked Glacier. The most recent volcanic activity at Four Peaked was in September of 2006 when a steam plume was observed. Steve McNutt is a volcano seismologist who was involved in the response to the activity at the Four Peaked Volcano. He's also involved with the new acoustic array project in Dillingham, which he says would have been useful when the Alaska Volcano Observatory was trying to determine what was happening back in September of 2006.
What happened was, of course, our reference point was we used to look at Augustine from places like Homer and Anchor Point. Well, if you look past Augustine toward Four Peaked, it's the same direction. So people saw a steam plume and assumed, well, it must be Augustine. But people who lived down farther to the south in Seldovia and places like that could tell that this wasn't Augustine. This was something clearly different.
McNutt says coupling infrasound monitoring with the existing monitoring equipment for volcanoes could produce a very powerful tool.
If you take the combination of seismology, which tells you what's happening under the ground, and marry that together with infrasound, which is what happens when things are going through the atmosphere, it's a very powerful combination to look at how energy is partitioned between the ground and the air. And it gives us much more clues as to how bubbly magma actually releases its energy in the form of an eruption.
The new acoustic array is actually part of a larger project funded by NOAA to use infrasound technology for monitoring. The project lead is the University of Mississippi, which is using infrasound to monitor hurricanes. Another partner in the project is the University of Hawaii, which is using infrasound to monitor tsunamis. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is a partner in charge of monitoring volcanic activity. Steve McNutt says the Dillingham area is nearly perfectly suited to the acoustic monitoring project.
An ideal place would be somewhere out in the middle of the Aleutians. The problem is the wind blows like hell and there's no trees. So Dillingham has the three things that you need. It's got power, internet connection, and trees, and it's closer to the volcanoes. So it's that combination that makes it a good place to do this experiment.
The new acoustic array has been installed but is not yet fully operational because it still needs a permanent power source. Saberla hopes the array can be brought online in a month or so when the Nooshigat Cooperative puts in a power line. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Sea Alaska has named the new head of a subsidiary tasked with economic development in Southeast small communities. Russell Dick is the new CEO of Ha'ani LLC, which will focus on resource extraction and other business ventures. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
It's no secret that most Southeast cities have been losing jobs and people. Changes in the fishing industry, the downturn in timber, and higher energy costs have sent some residents to nearby larger towns or outside the region. That's happened at the same time Sea Alaska has focused more on investments in manufacturing operations down south.
Sea Alaska's own economic presence within these communities in the region has diminished as we've continued to scale back our own operations.
Southeast's Regional Native Corporation wants to return some focus to its shareholders' home communities. So last year, it created a new subsidiary to support development of sustainable communities and economies within Southeast. Russell Dick was just named as president and CEO of that division, called Ha'ani, Tlingit for Our Land. It encompasses several existing initiatives, including oyster farming, sand and gravel, and wood pellet marketing and development. But it's looking for more, particularly resource extraction.
Mineral development, I think, is certainly a potential. When we look at economic development and opportunities for rural communities, you know, Sea Alaska has a subsurface land base that is quite substantial, and that's something we need to take a hard look at and determine whether or not those assets are on the table.
Ha'ani may also work in fisheries and forest management, and Dick says it could revisit some failed ventures.
We need to analyze why things weren't able to happen in the past. But going forward, again, it's about innovation. It's about overcoming obstacles. You know, I'm not particularly interested in hearing why something can't be done, but I'm more interested in hearing and understanding what it takes to make it happen.
Sea Alaska has given the subsidiary the same name it uses for its land selection bill before Congress. If it passes, the corporation would take ownership of tens of thousands of acres of valuable timberland that would be managed by Sea Alaska's logging subsidiary. It would also allow the corporation to select several dozen small plots of land that fit other Ha'ani goals. The so-called future sites could be used for ecotourism, hydro and tidal energy development, and other ventures. But Dick says it's unclear how the bill will fit into the business.
I won't say that Ha'ani, the division of Sea Alaska, will manage future sites, but future sites will certainly have a role in how we develop the region in terms of economic opportunities.
He says shareholder and local hire will be high priorities for any venture, but they also must make business sense. Dick, a shareholder who was raised in Hoonah, began his job in mid-August. He's also worked for Sea Alaska as Vice President of Corporate Development, Director of Diversity Solutions, and as a natural resources engineer. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau, and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Fike. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.